Good morning. Today's daf is Gimel in Yevamos, second day of Yevamos. Thanks Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf Belong Lozach Nishmas, Lois Lubin Zaltzman. We are finished with the Mishnah yesterday, although I did read the last line yesterday without much translation, so let's do that. That's the first thing I up for order. And then afterwards, we're going to start with the Gemara and make our way through the daf. Okay, the Mishnah, just as a brief overview of what we saw yesterday, we introduced to the Masechta Yevamos and the first Perek Yevamos and Chamesh Esrei Nashim and the 15 women. 50 women who pater themselves from Yibum, from Chalitza, not only themselves, but their Tzaros, not only their Tzaros, but the Tzaros of the Tzaros as well. So what does all that mean? That in of itself is a mouthful. So it means that the mitzvah of Yibum, the construct mitzvah of Yibum, is that if a man dies childless and he has a surviving brother, so the widow now has a zika, a connection to the surviving brother, and the surviving brother now has a mitzvah opportunity, the mitzvah of Yibum. Yesterday I quoted the Ramban on Chumash in Perek Lamed Chesav Sefer Breishis, where the Ramban says that this is a mitzvah kadmon, this is an early mitzvah. It predates the Torah, predates Sinai. I mean, Torah came first before everything, but you understand. The practice of this mitzvah was done prior to Sinai. And in this mitzvah, so the surviving brother now, lahakim shem achiv, to sustain the name of his brother, to continue a legacy of his brother, now is going to take the widow as a wife and perform the mitzvah of Yibum by having children now with the widow. That's the general construct of the case of Yibum. As the Ramban himself points out yesterday, as we noted yesterday, marrying your brother's wife, that's an erva. She's an erva. That's eishes ach, one of the arayos in the Torah. So can the mitzvah of Yibum override an erva? Generally speaking, the answer is no. Meaning that was yesterday's topic in the Mishnah. That if the mitzvah of Yibum is confronting an isser of arayos, the isser of arayos is going to trump the mitzvah of Yibum. That's generally true. That's almost always true, with the exception of eishes ach. What the Torah did is the Torah carved out a heter where, in the case of eishes ach, the Torah allows you to marry your brother's wife. Right, your brother's no longer there. Your brother, the Torah allows you to marry your brother's wife, lahakim shem achiv, in order to continue the legacy of your brother. But in all other cases of arayos, if there's any other scenario of arayos, so then the erva is going to trump the mitzvah of Yibum. So as a simple example, which is the first example that the Mishnah gave yesterday, Bito. So let's say Reuben and Shimon are brothers. Shimon is married to his niece. He married Reuven's daughter. Marrying your niece is okay. That's an acceptable marriage. And Shimon dies. And leaving Reuven now to marry, for the mitzvah of Yibum, his own daughter. So she's Petura. She has no mitzvah of Yibum. And because there's now no longer a mitzvah of Yibum, because there's another arayos on the daughter, there's another arayos on the Yavama, i.e., it's his daughter, so because of that, so therefore, he's going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Yibum. Now, as we pointed out yesterday, and the Gemara is going to address this today, the language of Petura, she's exempt from the mitzvah of Yibum, we could say it a lot stronger. More than just exempt from the mitzvah of Yibum, we could say that there's an Isser. There is an Isser of Erva. So why is the Mishnah using language of exemption that the Gemara is going to deal with today? We're going to see that in the Gemara inside. Additionally, that was the first point. Additionally, let's say when Shimon dies, Shimon not only died leaving his widowed niece, but let's say Shimon was married to another woman, right? What we described yesterday as Chana and Penina, okay? Because that's the names of the pictures in the book. So he leaves two wives to Reuven. One of them is an erva, and the other one is a tsara of an erva, co-wife of an erva. They're both going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Yibum. And when we say exemption over here, we mean that the Isser Erva is going to stand, both for Reuven's daughter and for the other wife as well, for the co-wife. That's Sarah's Erva. How come that is? It's a drasha we're going to see later this morning in today's daf. And then finally, the last point in the Mishnah is Sarah Sehem, right? The co-wife of the co-wife. If let's say Shimon was survived not by one brother, but let's say by two brothers. So again, Reuven had a daughter, Shimon married the daughter of Reuven, and on top of that, there was a third brother in this discussion, there was Levi. So you have Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. And Shimon dies, leaves two widows, one being his niece and the other one being another woman. And Levi now, he's not precluded from the mitzvah of Yibum, because to him, neither of those wives are an erva other than Eishes Ach. So Levi now can marry one of those two wives. Let's say he marries the tzara of an erva. Let's say instead of marrying Chana, That would be Reuven's daughter. Let's say he decides to marry the other woman. That would be Peninnah. And on top of that, he also had another wife as well. And Levi dies, so both are going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Yibam back to Reuven. The first one because she was the co-wife of Reuven's daughter, and the second one because she was the co-wife of a co-wife. So that's Sarah Sehem. Okay, and then all the Mishnah did, not a small thing, is the Mishnah pointed out that this case can exist in 15 different erva scenarios. And that's what the Mishnah taught us yesterday, Chamash Yisrei Nashim, Potra, Sarasim, Betara, Sarasim, and Nachalitim, and Yibam, Ad Sof HaOlam. That's the point of the Mishnah, is that this is true for daughter, and then we listed 15 others. I'm not going to go through the other 15 right now, but what we'll do in just a moment is we're going to explain why the Mishnah chose the order that it chose. So just through going through today's daf, we're going to see that there is a... We're going to have to end up going anyway through all 15. Good. That was...
Why the language is that she is patur instead of saying the man is patur, because the mitzvah falls on the man, not the woman.
That's a good question. Right.
Right. He's the one who's supposed to have the legacy of the brother.
Right. Continue on, right. Okay, good. Good question. It's a very good question. The mitzvah is on him, and the mitzvah is primarily on him.
Right.
Okay, so... Yeah, but the word pater over here in the context of the Mishnah is also focusing on the co-wife, meaning one is going to exempt the other. So the obvious point is that it's the ripple effect of she's going to be exempt, and because of her, the co-wife is going to be exempt as well. So maybe that's why the Mishnah chose the language of potros. Tosos points out, I didn't mention this yesterday, but Tosos points out also in our Mishnah they're described as Chamesh Yisrei Nashim, right? There are 15 women. But that's not unusual. However, if you contrast it to the next Mishnah, where the Mishnah is going to give the six that where the halacha is going to be different, so the Mishnah later on says Sheish Arayos Chamors Meilo. So on the next Mishnah coming up, just a week and a half from now, so it says six Arayos. So why our Mishnah uses the language of Chamesh Yisrei Nashim and the next Mishnah uses Sheish Arayos? And our Mishnah also, each one of them is an erva. Okay, Tosus. First Tosus on the Masechta points that out. Okay, good. Let's go on. I'm going to reread the last line of the Mishnah, and then we'll start with the Gemara. The Mishnah says, "Chol eichol l'mayim v'lo miyana, tzaras echoleses v'lo misiyam bemes." If there was a possibility for miyan, and she didn't do miyan, so then the co-wife will do chalitza, not yibam. Okay, this is it's one short line of Gemara of Mishnah. It's going to take a little bit of explaining to you. Miyan. Okay, I mentioned it briefly yesterday. I didn't do much in terms of explaining it yesterday, so just briefly. What's this idea of miyan? Miyan is basically an annulment of a marriage. There's an annulment of marriage in the Torah? So, no. The simple way to answer that question is no. Torah says that once you are invested in a marriage, so the only way to, only two ways to dissolve a marriage, either death or divorce. Okay, those are the only two ways to dissolve a marriage. You can't, there's no annulment. However, okay, without stated. There are times where the marriage is not a marriage mitzvah Torah, the marriage is only a marriage mitzvah Rabbanan, and under such circumstances, there are limited scenarios, actually I can only think of one, where the marriage can get dissolved. Okay, I'll give you the example. The classic example where miyan can occur is where you have a girl who is an orphan, meaning she doesn't have a father. We know that the father has a right to marry off his daughter, who is a katana. That's one of the rights that the Torah affords the father. And the father is no longer alive. The father died, so this girl now is an orphan. So now she's in a position where she doesn't have a father, she has a mother, she has brothers, but at the same time, it's a crazy world out there. And what the Chachamim did is gave an allowance for either her mother or for one of her brothers to marry her off. Okay, again, it's just, from our standpoint, from the world that we live in, it sounds strange, but you go back to a time where the woman was protected by her husband. I mean, still to this day, that's the job of the husband, but still, back then, it was she really needed the protection of her husband, so therefore the Chachamim afforded the opportunity for either her mother or for her brothers to marry off. Now, that marriage does not work on a Torah level. The Torah does not empower the mother or her brothers to marry off. That's strictly from the Chachamim. And so, with that in mind, what the Chachamim did is that they allowed the brother or her mother to marry her off. At the same time, as she becomes an adult, they gave her a one-chance opportunity to simply refuse the husband that was chosen for her. Now, if the father was the one who picked it, so then she doesn't have that right of refusal. The reason, very simple, because that marriage operates on a Torah level. Once a marriage operates on a Torah level, so then the only way to dissolve it is either through death or divorce. In this scenario, where the mother or the brother marries her off, so that marriage is only on a derabbanan level. And because of that, the Chachamim then afforded her the opportunity to do what's called miyun. We will be discussing miyun in much greater detail later on this Masechta. In the meantime, however, the Mishnah over here is describing the following scenario. Shimon dies. Shimon had two wives. One of the wives of Shimon was a ketana, who was married to him only through this rabbinic mechanism. And now, this ketana is, let's say, an erva to Reuven, aside from a shesach. And that's the point in the Mishnah. If she could have done miyun, but she didn't do miyun, so now you're looking at the co-wife. Now here it's interesting. There, generally speaking, we say that if the primary sister-in-law was an erva, she excuses herself and her co-wife from the mitzvah of Yibam and Chalitza. But here, the primary erva was not on a Torah level married to the brother, not married to Shimon. And so therefore, her marriage does not operate on a Torah level. Her marriage only operates on a Derabban level. So then the other wife, who was a bona fide wife of Shimon, is not on a Torah level a co-wife of the Ketana on a Torah level. So now when Shimon dies, and both of them now present themselves to Reuven through Zika, one is presenting herself as on a Derabban level, and the other one on a Torah level. And that's the point of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, under these circumstances, even though we generally say that the co-wife of an erva is going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Yibum, in this case, no. Because in this case, the erva herself is only connected rabbinically, not min haTorah. So therefore, that's what the Mishnah says. That in order for him, the surviving brother, to resolve the situation, chalitza. Because chalitza will remove the zika, remove the connection. Yibum is not an option. Because there's and the Gemara is going to discuss this later on, why Yibam itself is not an option. Okay, but that's the Mishnah. Okay, in of itself, that already we start off with a complicated point, but hopefully I presented that with some clarity. Let's start with the Gemara. Mechte kulam achos isha yafina and lesne achos isha bereisha. First order for business in today's daf is the order in the Mishnah. The Gemara wants to know, why did the Mishnah choose the order that it did? In other words, the objective of the Mishnah is to get through 15 women who is an erva to the surviving brother, and therefore is going to exempt herself, her co-wife, and all the derivative co-wives from the mitzvah of Yibam and Chalitza. That's the point of the Mishnah. We're going to get through 15. Why do we start with Bita? Why do we start with one's daughter? Start with Achos Isha. Start with your sister's, your wife's sister. What? Why start there? Why is the Gemara so compelled right now to say that that's the right place to start? So the answer to that comes up later in today's daf. We're going to learn later today that the whole source of this halacha, that an erva is going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Yibum, is based on Achos Isha. In other words, that's going to be the source, the derivative for all these halachas. So now, as long as you know that, so now you understand the question. So Achos Isha really is the linchpin for this entire discussion. So of all the arayos to mention in our Mishnah, mention Achos Isha first. That's what you should do. So me Achos Isha yalfinan. So listen Achos Isha bereisha. V'chitem atanu chomer chomer nakat. V'rabbi Shimon hi damasrefa chamura. So the Gemara suggests, well, maybe the Mishnah is operating with the following thought process. Look, we're going to get through 15. All of them are arayos. Okay, which means that relations with any one of the women mentioned in our Mishnah is subject to a kares penalty. But they're not all the same in terms of corporal punishment. Meaning that, let's take our first one for example, Bita. A man has relations with his daughter. So there, if he does it with no witnesses and no warning, and he does it b'mezi, he does it intentionally, it's kares. Fine. But what if there are witnesses and what if there was a warning? And yet he has relations with his daughter? There's corporal punishment. And not just corporal punishment, capital punishment. And not just capital punishment, but sreifa. Okay, that's burning. Okay, remember Sanhedrin, four different types of deaths. Skila, sreifa, herek, chenek. We just went through Yom Kippur. We got to repeat that a number of times. So the punishment for bito sreifa.
With
karet. Huh? Could be. Meaning maybe the capital punishment will be the kapara, will be the atonement. Okay, but anyway, so what the Gemara now is suggesting is that the course of order that the Mishnah chooses in terms of why we start with bito is because bito is, I'll call, the most heinous crime. It's not really the right way to say it, but the punishment exercised for bito is the most severe punishment. Okay, now let's think about this. A man has relations with his daughter with witnesses and warning and all the due process, and the punishment is sreifa, and that's the most severe punishment. Really? Think about what we said in Yom Kippur. What are the order of the Dal Mises based in? Skila, sreifa, herek, v'chenek. Which, and skila is the most severe. So why is our Gemara saying sreifa? So the Gemara is answering that. The answer is right in the Gemara. So ihach l'snechamos b'reish. I'm sorry. So v'chitema tanichomer chomer naka v'rebi shimoni damer sreifa chamura. And maybe the Gemara now is really suggesting two things. Number one, our Mishnah is going in the order of severity of punishment. And number two, you have, in order to say that, you're also going to have to say that our Mishnah follows the position of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says that Sreifa is more chamor than Skila. Right? Interesting, Machlokas and Sanhedrin. Which is more severe, the stoning or the burning? Okay, we can discuss it all we want. It's a Machlokas in the Gemara and Sanhedrin, and Rabbi Shimon says Sreifa is on top. So the Gemara says, if that's correct, so the Gemara says, well, if you're right, so then I wouldn't have put Bito first, I would have put Chamosa, one's mother-in-law. One's mother-in-law, man has relations with his mother-in-law, that's also a chi of Sreifa. And the Gemara's argument is, that really should have gone in the number one slot. Why? Because not only is it Sreifa, but the Torah explicitly mentions there that a man has relations with his mother-in-law, so he's subject to Sreifa. So that should be number one if the order was based on severity of punishment. And then, on top of that, then we should have moved right to daughter-in-law. Because the punishment for having relations with one's daughter-in-law is skila. So then we should have done chamoso, bito, and then we should have done kalaso, because then we would have gone to the next most severe punishment, and that would have been one's daughter-in-law, because that's skila. So the Gemara says, all right, obviously that's not the pattern of the Mishnah, that this is not going to be a good explanation of our Mishnah, that the Mishnah was going in the order of severity of punishment. Gemara says, okay, attempt number two. Ela bito kim dasi madrasha chavivale. So the Gemara says, well, we can make the following argument, and that is that the first erva mentioned in the Mishnah is bito, and you know why bito is number one? Because that the Torah does not explicitly mention. That comes via a drasha, and because it comes via a drasha, so it's chaviv, it's beloved. Beloved, what does that mean? Take a look at the last Rashi. Last Rashi on Beis Amud Beis. He writes, "Kim dasi midrasha le'asar alav chaviv aleila tan va'aktamei bereisha ulekamim mefarishli." Okay, Rashi says just simply that the is most beloved. I'm sorry, it's not right. I was thinking of another Rashi. Anyway, Rashi over here just simply doesn't add much more to the Gemara. It's beloved because it comes via drasha. Now, let's think this through. What the Gemara now is arguing is that bito is number one because the Torah doesn't mention explicitly. Well, what does that mean? Right? Open up, again, one of the prerequisites to going through our perek, the first perek of Yevamos, and truth of matter is all Seder Nashim, is really we should all be fluent in the Pesukim and Achrimos and Kedoshim, where the Torah over there outlines the Isurim, or the Isuri Arayos. So it's a little bit strange that the Torah doesn't explicitly mention one's daughter. Okay, just quoting a couple of psukim over here. Right, Ervas bas bincha, this is Vayikra yud ches yud. Ervas bas bincha, bas bincha, lo sigal ervas amki ervas ena. Right, the daughter of your son, the daughter of your daughter. Ervas isha ubita lo sigala. This is Perik yud ches pasuk yud zayin. A woman and her daughter lo sigala as bas benaves bas bita lo sikach legalos erva sheira haina. In other words, The Torah says explicitly, what is our Gemara saying? Our Gemara is saying, well, we only learn it via drasha. What does that mean? Okay, so Rashi knew our Gemara, obviously. So now you understand the Rashi, which I didn't read yesterday. The Rashi... No, it's here. Here we go. I'm sorry. Lost, but now found. So the take a look at Rashi back in the Mishnah on Beis HaManav. I didn't read this Rashi yesterday. So Rashi says the Bito Dahacha. I'm in the middle of the Rashi of Ve'im Chamos Ve'im Chamav. So Rashi over here explains that when the Mishnah mentions daughter, it doesn't mean your biological daughter that comes in wedlock. Rashi says we're talking about your daughter that comes out of wedlock. Rashi describes it as bitomi anusasa. I mentioned yesterday we're going to be speaking about a lot of dysfunction, meaning that's going to be a big theme in throughout the Masechta, dysfunctional family. So it's your daughter that was born to you out of wedlock. V'chein bas bito, bas beno. And the same thing is true that in the Mishnah when it mentions your granddaughter, both from your son or from your daughter. De'ilu bito me'ishto haino bas ishto. De'kevim dechtiv isha bita lo shna mimeno lo shna mi'isha cher. Rashi points out, it can't be your daughter that's from wedlock. That's a pasuk in the Torah. Ava bito minasa zolo yafa le'mahacha de'isha yide kedusha mashma shu isha semikra achrin anafke kedmefarsh begemara. Rashi in the Mishnah says that when it comes to a daughter that was born to you out of wedlock, the Torah does not explicitly mention it. That's what the Mishnah is describing. And now we understand our Gemara. Our Gemara says that the Mishnah mentions Bito first. Why? Because it comes via drasha. It's not explicitly mentioned in the Torah. We asked the question, what do you mean it's not explicitly mentioned? I quoted two psukim that explicitly mention one's daughter, one's granddaughter. No, the psukim are talking about the daughters that are coming in wedlock. Rashi says, focus on the word Isha. Isha means she's your wife. And the daughter that comes is a result of your wife. So when the Mishnah says Bito, it means a daughter out of wedlock. That's not explicitly mentioned in the Torah. A man has relations with his daughter that was born to him out of wedlock. How do we know that that is an erva? So that we learn out through a drasha. So Kevin Da'asi Midrasha Chavivale. So that's the Gemara's point over here. That's why it's number one. And what is, right. You're right. So, and the Gemara points out, Kulanami Midrasha Asya. The Gemara says, well, hold on one second. Slow down. Every one of the cases in the Mishnah is also being learned out through a drasha. Meaning, as we'll see later on in the Amud Beis, there's no explicit mention in the Torah that for all these arayas, if they enter into a Yibam scenario, they're going to be exempt. How do we know it? Drasha. And that's true for every one of the cases in the Mishnah, maybe with exception to Achos Isha. Your wife's sister, meaning two brothers married two sisters. But outside of that, it's all learned out through a drasha. So what does the Gemara mean when it says, well, Bito's number one because it comes through a drasha? So the Gemara explains, So the Gemara says, look, you're right. Of course, all these arayos mentioned in the Mishnah are learned through a drasha in that if we enter into a Yibam scenario, and the surviving wife is a widow, is any one of the arayos, and she's going to be exempt from Yibam, you're right, that's learned out through the drasha. But the fact that she's an erva, that the Torah says explicitly, when it's bito me'anusaso, your daughter out of wedlock, that's not, that the iser itself is not explicitly mentioned in the Torah, and that's why it's learned out through a drasha, and that's why it's number one in our Mishnah, because, and this is, I was kind of hoping Rashi would say this, he didn't, so we're going to say it together now. And why is it beloved? Because anything that's not explicitly mentioned in the Torah, and we need Torah Shabbat Peh, so we have such a strong love for Torah Shabbat Peh, so that's why I made it number one into the list. Amarav Amarli Rav Yitzchak Rav Dimi Asya Hina Hina Asya Zima Zima. This should sound familiar, because if you remember, not that long ago, Masechta Chagiga, so remember the Mishnah in Chagiga, what did the Mishnah say? When talking about arayos, don't talk to a large crowd. Talk to a small crowd, right? The Mishnah said no more than two, Right? Why? So if you remember, the Gemara's explanation over there is that they're going to get distracted and they're going to miss an important point. And what's the important point? Meaning, can't I open up a chumash? Can't I see all the arayas straight out? And the Gemara there in Chagiga said, no, one of the arayas is not explicitly mentioned in the Torah, and you need a drasha. And the drasha is a little bit complicated. It's based on a double gzeira shava, using the words hena hena, using the words zima zima. Okay, again, I mentioned this back in Chagiga, and I'm going to mention it now again. Go through the Rashi. Rashi takes you through the Pesukim. You can look at the good book. The good book also takes you through the Pesukim in terms of the connection between a number of different Pesukim. And basically the result using the drushes is that Bito Minasaso, your daughter that comes out of wedlock, is going to be an erva to you. And therefore, if she presents herself to you for Yibum consideration, she's going to be exempt because she's an erva. Okay. So the Gemara says, okay, good. So now the order of the Mishnah is that we put Bito first and Bas Bito and Bas Beno first because they are learned through a drasha. Chaviv alein, that's beloved. So then the Gemara says, fine, but then you know what should happen? Achas Isha should be last. Why? Because that's explicit. The only Irva of the 15 mentioned under Mishnah, where the Torah explicitly says that if she, the Achos Erva, presents herself for Yibum, she's going to be exempt. The others are learned out through a drasha. So Achos Isha should be last. Now, we haven't seen that pasuk yet. That's coming on the Amud Beis. Stay tuned. But for now, let's just assume, it'll come up, that Achos Isha is explicitly mentioned, she should be last, because that's not Torah Shabbat Peh, that's strictly Torah Shabbat Chsav. So Aydi Da'ari Be'Esther Achvasa, so the Gemara says, look, you're right, but here's what happened. Take a look at the list of 15 in our Mishnah. And now we get to look at the groupings of the 15. So, what are the first one? The first one is Bito, and again, Bito is number one because that comes through a drasha. And as long as we're Bito, that also explains the next two, Bas Bito and Bas Beno. Your granddaughter and from both on your son's side and on your daughter's side. Okay. Now what happens is, Aydi Da'ari Be'isra Achvasa, Tana Achos Ishto. So then the Gemara says that the let me move back before I go back in the Gemara. Go back to the list and the Mishnah. And then that explains 4, 5, and 6 as well. Because 4, 5, and 6 is Bas Ishto, Bas Bena, Bas Bita. Same basic idea. Right? Your daughter. Your wife's daughter, your wife's granddaughter. Both on her son's side and on her daughter's side. Good. So all that are grouped together because that all falls under the category of daughter. So now, Aydi Da'ari Be'Esther Achvasa Tana Achvas Ishto, Achos Ishto. V'lisne Lahai Bava L'Besof, Ela Tana Korve Korve Nakat. So the Gemara says it's all going by family. Tana Bito, Bas Beno, the Kruve Atzmo, they're all related to you, meaning the first three. Aydi the Tana Shloshe, Doros Lamata Dide, Tananami Shloshe Doros Lamata Dida. Then it goes to your wife's daughter and granddaughter. The Gemara calls the three generations, counting your wife as generation number one. So then the one below her, her daughter, and the one two below her, which the Gemara here is referring as to three, that's her granddaughter. Aydi the Tani Shloshe Doros Lamata Dida, Tana Shloshe Doros Lamala Dida. And now we've gone through 1, 2, and 3, that's your daughter and granddaughter. 4, 5, 6, that's your wife's daughter and granddaughter. Now, what about 7, 8, 9? That's your wife's mother and grandmother. In other words, right now, you see the pattern in the Mishnah? You going down, your wife going down, a generation, two generations, your wife going up, a generation, two generations, and the Metani Achos of Achos Imo, the Kruve Atzmo. Now, we've explained 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Number 10, Achoso Me'imo. It's your sister, it's your maternal sister. So the Gemara says, Achosimo de Kruve Atzmo. Because that's now that we finished the first 9, which is patterned after you, your wife, going down, going up, now we go to your relatives. Achosimo, your maternal sister. Achoso Me'imo. And then, Aydi Da'ari Be'Esther Achva, Tana Achvas Ishto. And then, that's 10 and 11, right? Your sister through your mother, the sister of your mother, that's 10 and 11. and they're prohibited to you because they are your family, then achos ishto is your wife's sister, meaning two brothers married two sisters. Uvidinu delikme lekalas mikame eshes achiv shalaya balamo. And now, and the Gemara points out 14 and 15 really should have been flipped. The first thing is kalaso, because that's your daughter-in-law, that's related to you through a marriage, and then finally your brother. But the Gemara explains over dinner delikme lekalas mikame eshes achiv shalaya balamo delo mishum korvahu. But the Gemara points out that as long as we were discussing the prohibitions as a result of brothers, so that's why number 14, your brother, that you and your brother never were in the world together, that's number 14, that's why it comes in. And then kalasa, because kalasa only is prohibition as a result of marriage, not because of achva, not because of a brother relationship. Okay. Period. Can I say that outside quickly, just as a quick review? Again, the 15 arayos mentioned the Mishnah. Why mention it in the order that it did? So quickly, just to review. The first one is going to be Bito, and the reason why Bito is number one in the Mishnah is because the Torah doesn't explicitly mention that a daughter out of wedlock is an erva. We know that based on Torah Shabbat Peh, using the double gzereshava of Heina Heina Zima Zima. Good. That's number one. Then, two and three are just extensions of that, meaning not only your daughter out of wedlock, but your granddaughter out of wedlock, both if she's your granddaughter through your son or your daughter. So that's one, two, and three. Then we turn to one's wife, your wife's daughter and your wife's granddaughter, because same basic model, where it is your wife, a generation and two going down. As long as we're discussing that, then 7, 8, 9, your wife, her mother, her grandmother. Okay, so that is 7, 8, 9. Then achos imo, 10 and 11, those are your relatives, your maternal sister that your brother married. Again, you go through the book. The book will take you through step by step. How in the world did your brother marry your maternal sister? Okay? It's based on a lot of marriages and divorces in order to get to that point. But if your brother married your maternal sister and he dies, leaving you now a maternal sister as one of the Yavama considerations, she's an erva, she's exempt, her co-wife are going to be exempt, etc., etc. That is 10 and 11. They're both related to you, achos imo and achos imo, your maternal sister or your mother's sister. Achos ishto, then your wife's sister, then Eshes Achiv Me'imo, the wife of your brother, who is only who's only your brother maternally and not paternally. And as we mentioned yesterday, the mitzvah of Yimum is only for paternal brother, not for a maternal brother. Again, all that are related to you. And then finally, that explains now 10, 11, 12, 13, and then 14 and 15. 14 and 15 are your brother that you never knew. But when I say never knew, I mean you and your brother weren't in the world together. Right? The Reuven died before Levi ever came into this world. Okay, that is another exemption. They have to be in the world together. Yachdav. And finally, number 15, Kalaso. And the Gemara points out that 14 and 15 principally should have been flipped, but as long as we were discussing relatives to you that were achva, meaning your brother, so that's why 14 comes in there, because he is your brother, even though you and him didn't share the same world together. And finally, kalaso, that's the daughter-in-law. That's a brief summary of why the Mishnah chose the 15 in the order that it did. Period. Ad kan. We are now continuing in the Gemara. We're on Gimel. You have to see the pesukim inside in order to understand. Each pesuk in of itself only gives us one piece of information, and it's only through the two pesukim, because one pesuk, I'm just going to say it very briefly, one pesuk is going to tell us the iser and the other pesuk is going to tell us the onesh. One pesuk tells us about the actual prohibition, and the other one then generates a punishment as well. Without the two pesukim, I wouldn't have known both points. Okay. Again, all this you could see in Rashi Asya Hena Hena. It's the fourth line down on the Gemara. Okay. Umay Iria Detana Potros. Gimel Amud Aleph, halfway down the page. The Gemara now is bothered by a very simple question. I foreshadowed this question. The Mishnah's language of Potros. What a strange language. These women are going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Yibum. It's more than an exemption. Again, if there is no mitzvah of Yibum, so then we're back to Arayus. She's prohibited. So the idea that she's exempt from the mitzvah of Yibum, it's true, but the Mishnah could and maybe should be using a much stronger language. Don't marry her. She's an erva. So the Gemara is bothered by this. Ma'iria to Tani Pochos, Lisnei Asuros. So Itani Asuros, Avemin Asuliyabim. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you what. If the Mishnah would have chosen the language of Aser, I might have thought that, you know what Aser means? Aser means that you can't do Yibum. Ava Mechle, it's Chatsa. But okay, you can't do Yibum. Okay, but do Chalitza. So Kamash Malan. So that's what the Mishnah is coming to tell me. That the word Petur means that there is nothing. There's a removal, a total siluk of the mitzvah altogether, both on the Yibum and on the Chalitza. V'lisne Asura Lachlotz. So Gemara says, really, if that's the whole problem, so why doesn't the Mishnah say Asur Lichlotz? So my Ka'avid. So the Gemara says, okay, but what have you done? Alam Alo. So why not Chalitza? Meaning, okay, I understand Yibum, no, because she's an Erva, and you're Pogeba Erva, and you're having relations with an Erva, and that's an Issacharis. That I get. Okay, but Chalitza, what's the harm in Chalitza? Meaning, just do Chalitza, and what just happened? Well, if she needed Chalitza, great. She got released. And if she didn't need Chalitza, okay, so you did a ceremony, which is unnecessary. So the Gemara says, the Gemara says, I'll tell you what the problem is. Problem is that in this scenario, let's say we're going to do Chalitza. But then people are going to think, why did you do Chalitza? Because there was a Zika, because there was a bond. So in a parallel scenario, the next time this happens, I understand this is rare, but in a parallel scenario, the next time it happens, we're going to remind ourselves, you know, the last time this kind of thing happened, we did Chalitza, next time we're going to do Yibum.
Why don't make sense the same argument for Alionis and Mius, that you said that they do Chalitza? For an Alionit and also Mius, they said that...
Okay, fine.
Chalitza.
Right.
Okay, good.
Now, the Gemara is going to address that. Not today, but the Gemara will address... Sometimes we do Chalitza when there's not a Yibum scenario, and the Gemara is not worried, but okay, fair question. And if I remember correctly, we're going to discuss that. But ima to omer chaletzus mizyabemis, kevin de malko mitzvah da sirit sara, shoba malko mitzvah, shari mishum hachi tini potros. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, let me do that again. Ima to omer chaletzus mizyabemis. So the Gemara says, well, if you do Chalitza, you're going to do Yibum. Kevin de malko mitzvah hu da sirit sara, ushalo be malko mitzvah sharia, Mishum hachi tani pochos. So the Gemara says, "Look, I'll tell you what the language that the Mishnah chooses is pater, because let's imagine a similar scenario where not a Yibum scenario, but in other words, a man died and he had a number of wives. One of them happens to be an erva to you, not your brother, Stam, just another person. In such a scenario, the other co-wives." Are they mutter or usher to you? In other words, it wasn't your brother who died, just a regular guy. The other women are not usher to you, right? The only time that the co-wives of an erva are going to be usher is only in a yibum context. Only when your brother died and he was married to your erva. Then and only then, the erva is going to be usher to you and all the co-wives as well. So what the Mishnah wanted to do was the Mishnah chose the language of Potros and not Asuros. Had the Mishnah written the word Isser, we would have all concluded that, you know what? Anytime your Erva shares a co-wife, forget your brother, any other person. Anytime that a co-wife your Erva shares a co-wife, that co-wife is going to be Asur to you. If the Mishnah would have chosen the language of Asur. The Mishnah chose the language of Potter, because it's telling us that this is only limited to a Yibum context. No other context. The Gemara says that's why the Mishnah chooses the language of Potros. Okay, fine. So, Question number one, why choose the language of Patra as opposed to Asr? Asr seems to be, would seem to be the better language. The Gemara says no, because of the, perhaps the erroneous conclusion that any time you have a co-wife with your erva, she's Asr to you, and that's not true. It's only going to be true in the Yibam context. Patra tells us that, as opposed to Asr, which may not have told us that. Okay. First of all, why did the Mishnah say Chalitza and Yibam? Just simply say, say Yibam. So, Itana min ha-Yibam, ha-Vamina, mechwas chalitza, Yibam alam. So the Gemara says, well, if the Mishnah would have just simply said, you can't do Yibam to her, I might have thought, okay, I can't do Yibam, but I'll do Chalitza. The Gemara says, "Kamash lan kol ha'ol aliyibam ol lechalitza v'choshein ol aliyibam in ol lechalitza." So the Gemara says, "No, I'll tell you why. The Mishnah has to say both mention yibam and chalitza because they go hand in hand. Meaning, if there's yibam, there's chalitza. If there's no yibam, there's no chalitza. They are linked with one another. Once they have an exemption from yibam, they are going to have an exemption from chalitza. Good, and that's a rule, and we're going to see that rule a number of times throughout our masechta. V'lisnei min yibam u'min chalitza inami min chalitza luchuda." Now, last question on this piece of Gemara. The order of the Mishnah. It is strange. The Mishnah says there's an exemption from Chalitza and from Yibum. Why start with Chalitza? Why not say there's an exemption from Yibum and Chalitza? We're going to learn later together in the Masechta that if there is an option, if there's a Yibum opportunity, and you're looking right now and you're trying to make a decision in life, should I do Yibum or should I do Chalitza? Yibum's the mitzvah. Chalitza is, right, it's an exit. It's a release from the mitzvah of Yibum. But Yibum is the primary mitzvah. So in our Mishnah, even though, of course, the Mishnah is talking about exemption, but at least in terms of the order of what you're exempt from, Yibum should be mentioned first. So the Gemara's answer is Abishalhi. The author of our Mishnah is Abishal de Amar, mitzvahs Chalitza kodemas mitzvahs Yibum. The Abishal's position is that if you have a choice of which one to do first, you should do Chalitza and not Yibum. What? Why is that? The Gemara on Daf Lamed Tes is going to tell us why that should be, what Abishal's thought process is. Stay tuned. Stay with me for just another short 4 more weeks. No, I'm sorry, more. Five more weeks in the Daf, and we're going to see together why it is that Abishal is not in favor of Yibum, but rather would prefer Chalitza. Both are options. Which one should you opt with? So again, we're going to see later on that the position of Abishal Hizatana is that first you should do Chalitza and then you should do Yibam. Okay, Adkan, that takes us now to
Does that preclude you if you do the Chalitza?
Yeah, right, correct. Once you do Chalitza, you can't do Yibam. That's exactly right. And Abishal says that's what I would prefer. And again, Lamed Tes, we're going to see what's behind Abishal's thought process.
The mitzvah of Yibam is mentioned first.
Correct.
It's the first mitzvah.
Abishal's position is a chiddush, and we're going to explain it later. Okay, so far what we have done today is as follows. We have explained the Mishnah in terms of the order. Why the Mishnah started with Bito and ended with Kalaso. So the Gemara addressed that, explained that. The second thing that we discussed in the Mishnah is why the Mishnah used the word Pater as opposed to Asr. Asr would seem to be the stronger way to say it and the more correct way to say it. The Gemara said that if we used Asr, we'd arrive at an erroneous conclusion that any time a co-wife was a co-wife of your Erva, she's Asr to you, and that's not true. It's only in the context of Yibum that the co-wife of an Erva is Asr to you. The next thing we discussed in the Gemara today was the order of the Mishnah, why the Mishnah says you're exempt from Chalitza and from Yibum. The Mishnah should have said you're exempt from Yibum and Chalitza. Yibum is preferred. And talk about the exemption from Yibum before Chalitza. Answer our Mishnah is going like Abishal. Okay, so three basic points that were discussed so far in the Gemara today. Next. Yes. In other words, they go hand in hand. Next thing we're going to be discussing today is why the Mishnah says 15 women. You know how this works. We see this time and again. The Mishnah is giving a list. The Mishnah is giving us a number. We don't need the number. We could do it. We can go through the Mishnah and count, and we would have arrived at the number 15. When the Mishnah is saying 15, obviously the Mishnah is also making another point. Minyana de resh lamut emai, minyana de seif lamut emai. And not only does the Mishnah say 15, but if you notice, the Mishnah says 15 twice. Mishnah says 15 in the beginning, Mishnah says 15 at the end. So mentioning 15 twice, why should that be? Why is that necessary? So the Gemara says, minyana de resh lamut emai, minyana de seif lamut emai. So the Gemara says, Maile Ma'ute. So the Gemara says, the Gemara is on the top. We're now on the top of Gimel Amud Beis. The Rav Uderav Asi. So we're coming to exclude the exemptions of Rav and Rav Asi. Okay, how could they take a position? Right, how could they take a position that goes against the Tanya? So for Rav, I know the answer to
that. It's not that. It's like the Mishnah was written before Rav was even born. So right. Why would?
Well, Rav is not innovating. Meaning, Rav had this as a tradition. So what Rav is articulating is a position that must have been at one point in time held by others as well.
So why didn't he cite them as a?
Well, the point the Gemara is about to make is that in the Mishnah we want to exclude them from the. In other words, we know that there are opinions that of such that exist. And the Mishnah is telling us that the Mishnah is not buying.
The word exclude them means that the man can marry.
Right. Well, stay good. Stay tuned. So the Amute, the Rav, the Rav Asi, the Rav, the Rav Asi, the Amute Mai. Now, what is the what are Rav and Rav Asi? So again, take a look at Rashi over here. I'm going to mention it briefly now, and in a week from now, we're going to discuss both of these cases in more detail. Amar Rav Tzarasota Asura. Okay, Rav says that the co-wife of a sota is prohibited. Meaning, Shimon dies, he had two wives, one of them was a sota. Sota over here, right, sota has two meanings. One is the more traditional meaning, which is, she secluded herself with a room, with a man that she was told not to seclude herself with, and the Torah, now we're going to take her to Yerushalayim, and she's going to drink the mesota. Okay, that's one. And the other one is, she committed adultery. Meaning, sota also is referring to the wife who just simply committed adultery. She's called a sota. Her status is she's prohibited to her husband and also to the man that she committed adultery with.
She wasn't killed by the...
Let's say there wasn't two witnesses. Let's say they didn't give a warning. Oh, for whatever reason, she's still alive. According to Rav, the co-wife of a sota is pater from the mitzvah of Yibum. Why that should be, again, that comes up later. We'll discuss that later. So Asura Sheim Zinsa Ishta Velo Isha Acheres Umeis Belo Banim Shtem Peturos. So that's the exemption of Rav, the co-wife of Asota. Rav Asi Amar Tzaras Ilonis Asura Sheim Ayanasu Ilonis Visha Acheres Umeis Belo Banim Shtem Peturos V'Tavayu Bipirkin. And according to Rav Asi, the other co-wife is the other exemption is a co-wife of an islandess. For reasons which the Gemara later on will point out, Rashi says, stay tuned, in our perek, we're going to be discussing this. So, no. In other words, it has to be the tzara of an erva. Rav and Rav Asi are providing chidushim, that even though the sota, she's not an erva, she committed adultery, but she herself doesn't have the status of an erva, and yet the co-wife of her is going to be exempt from yibum to chidush. And the Mishnah is telling us, we're not buying the Chiddush. So Lamute Dravu Dravasi. Laravu Dravasi Lamute Mai. Good. So the Gemara says, okay, now that's great if you don't hold of Rav and Ravasi. What about Rav and Ravasi? What are they going to do with our Mishnah? So Israelu Da Da Dechad. Now, the Gemara says, let's assume that they hold of each other. Okay. So now that there are two cases that are not excluded in the Mishnah. So then when the Mishnah says 15, so what's the Mishnah excluding? So the Gemara says there are two other cases which are also to be excluded from the Mishnah, and that is the co-wife of a Mamenes and the co-wife of Machzer Grushaso. Mamenes, again, we're going to hold off on that. That's also coming up later in the Perek, so we'll hold off on that for now. Machzer Grushaso, what is that? Shimon divorces his wife. She marries another man. That gets a divorce from the other man, goes back to Shimon. That's an Isser in the Torah. It's what's called Machzer Grushaso. Now, if she didn't get married during the interim, so then she can go back to Shimon. But if she got married in the interim and she goes back to Shimon, so that is an Isser in the Torah. In fact, the Torah describes that as being Toeva. Torah is...
Even if the second man dies?
Yeah. Once she marries another man, she's forbidden to her original husband. So that's Machzer Grushaso. And then, in such a scenario where Shimon dies, and he now left two widows, one of them happened to have been Machzer Grushaso, the argument would be she's exempt and her co-wife is going to be exempt as well. The Mishnah is excluding such a case. Now, the now, Hedy, I'll address your question. I won't answer your question, but I'll address your question. And when the Mishnah is excluding all these cases, meaning the case of Sarasota, the co-wife of a Sota, the co-wife of an islandist, the co-wife of a Mam Enes, which we didn't explain, the co-wife of a Machzi Grushoso. And if the Mishnah is excluding them, that means what? So it would seem to mean that now if they're excluded from the Mishnah, there is a mitzvah of Yibum. Rashi doesn't say that. Rashi says, Machzi Grushoso, so take a look at the Rashi, Machzi Grushoso, where he writes, Rashi says that he can't do yibum, but you do need chalitza because they're not in our Mishnah. It's interesting, right? You could have argued. Okay, I took a look at some of my notes on the Gemara. You could have argued, and some Rishonim make this argument, that if they're not in the Mishnah, that means that there's no patur, which means that there's a mitzvah. And you could do yibum to the co-wife. Okay, Rashi doesn't say that. Rashi clearly says that you can't do yibum as well. Okay, the Elo sphere, so good. So we have two cases in our that are excluded from the Mishnah, even if you subscribe to the viewpoint of Rav and Rav Asi. The Elo sphere lo da da di chadel mo te dechavre mechadel mo te otzaras mamenos otzaras machzik rushaso. So, and if they don't hold of each other, Rav and Rav Asi don't hold of each other, so that just makes it easier. So that means then that one exclusion is for their case, and the other exclusion could either be Mamenes or Machzer Grushaso. L'Rav L'Rav Asi Lisnu L'Fisha Lisnu L'Fisha Ebet Sarat Sara. So the Gemara says, now according to Rav and Rav Asi, now they don't want to be against the Mishnah. So why isn't their case in the Mishnah? The Gemara says the technical reason. Because the Mishnah, in order to be a case in the Mishnah, you have to conform to all this, all the different circumstances in the Mishnah, including the co-wife of a co-wife. In the case of Sarasota, the co-wife of a Sota, you're not going to have that by any of the other brothers. In other words, there won't be a double derivative for a very simple reason. Because when Shimon dies, that Sota is also to all the brothers. So it's just simply impossible to get to a case of Tzaratzara. Okay. Good, period. Okay. Quick summary of today. We'll stop. We'll pick it up tomorrow. Okay, what do we so far cover today? Four basic questions in the Gemara. Number one, order the Mishnah, why the Mishnah started with Bito. Answer, that came through a Drasha because it's Bito, Man, Nusasso, and Chavivle. Two, why did the Mishnah say Pater when it should be saying Aser? Answer, because if it said Aser, it would give the erroneous impression that any co-wife of an Erev is Aser, and that's not true. Only in the context of Yibum is the co-wife of a Erev going to be Aser. Three, why does it start with Chalitza and then mention Yibum? Answer, our Mishnah is going like Abishol, who prefers Chalitza over Yibum. Four, why did the Mishnah give us the number 15? Answer, because in excluding other cases. What other cases are being excluded? Either you don't subscribe to Rav and Rav Asi, so excluding those cases, or you do subscribe to Rav and Rav Asi, and it will exclude maybe the case of Tzaras Mamenes or Machzer Grushoso. If Rav and Rav Asi assume their position to be correct, which they do, why didn't our Mishnah mention them? Technical reason, because in their case, you can't get to Tzaratzara.